Hi all, and welcome to this session where I talk about digital market environment from the perspective of changes in customer behavior and the field of competition. Here are the learning goals. So first of all, after the session, I would like you to be able to explain the concept of customer empowerment and its implications for buying behavior. And secondly, analyze how digitalization shapes the firm's competitive landscape. This is the positioning of the session to the course framework. So, as explained, the left-hand side figure and the outer ring depicts the key drivers of changes in the market environment, and especially from the digitalization point of view, technological development, changes in customer behavior, and changes in the field of competition are probably the most important drivers that we'll focus. And today we're going to talk about changes in customer behavior and changes in the field of competition. Starting with the changes in customer behavior. The first question we could propose is, what are customers or modern customers like? And here are some trends that I've collected from different sources of information and research reports. And it is a list of attributes that seem to be common to describe what today's customers are like. And starting from the top, where it says busy, so many consumers find themselves busier than ever, especially the ones who are perhaps full-time students or employees or parents who have a family to cater for. Especially those people find themselves busy. But overall, when looking at longitudinal data sets, it appears that customers and people in general feel that they are busier than ever. It's another discussion whether we are actually busier than ever, or whether we just feel that we are busier than ever. But from the marketing perspective, it doesn't really matter that much. The idea that people feel they are busy, it means for the marketers that we should continuously think about all types of solutions that help customers to save time and do things more efficiently. And obviously, the digital environment is a great place to offer such applications, web services, different kinds of tools that might save some time from the customers. Second one, it says self-directed. And by self-directed, I mean that more and more consumers want to be in control of their purchasing processes, and they want to manage their customer relationships or the relationships that they are in cus as customers. So it basically means that we do not want to be manipulated by sales representatives or companies, but we want to make independent decisions, and we want to feel that whatever decision we make is made by ourselves rather than we were manipulated or influenced by somebody else. And again, the marketing implication is that we should support consumers with all types of information and resources that help customers to navigate purchasing processes independently. Third one, or third attribute, is individualized. And by that, I mean that increasing number of consumers want to feel unique. They want to feel VIPs rather than standard customers. They want to have special products and services, something that is tailored for them specifically. And the marketing implication here is that you should think of ways how customers could perhaps customize the products or services that you're offering for them, or then you can use personalization tactics so that based on the customer data that you have, you can personalize certain services, products, and experiences to cater for this need for individualization. Again, digital media works here very well. So we are able, often unlike in physical environment, it's really difficult to really tailor any product or service to customer needs. But in the digital environment, there are many tools that we can use for personalization. Fourth attribute is experience seeking. So there are many times when we are busy, but then when we are not busy, we look for unique experiences. We look for something new, something cool, something that makes us forget how busy we are in our daily lives. So this, from the marketing perspective, is probably quite challenging. You really need to be innovative and creative here. Of course, depends also on the context, but you can think of ways how to make perhaps even purchasing funnier, more entertaining, or then the use of products or services more entertaining. The fifth attribute is community oriented. So we human beings are social animals, so to speak. So we are interested in other people and their opinions, and we have this sense of belonging. We want to belong to something. And often, of course, we want to belong to our friends and family, but also so we have special interests that we want to sort of belong to, or let's say we want to find like-minded people. And again, I think digital environment again is a great place to foster this type of community building. But when speaking of brand communities, it's often not about the product or service, but you could start building a community of a special interest group. So a certain team, let's say if you're a bank, you could build a community where investors and people are interested in investing in stocks, and you can build a community around it where people can discuss and meet with like-minded people and these types of things. Finally, responsible. So more and more consumers are interested in responsibility and sustainability, and we demand companies to meet the ethical standards, to say the least. But more than that, most or many customers want to do business or purchase products from companies who are doing something good for the society. So the companies that are not causing problems, but instead solving them. And that is, of course, one key implication for market as well, that as people have become more sustainability and responsibility oriented, the question is, how is your brand positioned to sustainability, and what kind of societal issues do your product, services, and other activity actually helps to solve? So these are six common trends that at least I seem to encounter. Some of these attributes are more related to functional needs. So we need to do something, we need to get something done, functional needs. And then some of these are more related to emotional needs, like experience seeking and individualized services, products. Those are very highly emotional type of things. So we want to feel certain things. And then responsibility and community orientation are related to social needs. So we want to belong something, and we have this sense of trying to make this world a better place. So we want to be in favor of these responsible companies. One key implication of the figure, and when discussing this a little bit further, is that it is not so that everyone is busy or everyone is community oriented or everyone wants to be highly individualized. It's rather the other way around. So some of us are busy, some of us are not. Some of us want these personalized services, some of us just want standard products. Some of us want to belong to a community, many of us do not. Some of us want to be self-directed. Then again, some people don't want to do anything on their own. So it really depends. And the key implication of the whole figure is that customers are heterogeneous, which requires companies to really do a great job in understanding customers and especially the target groups that they have selected. So who are these consumers in their target in the target groups that the companies have selected? Are they predominantly busy or experience seeking? What are they? So that should be the very first thing that companies should sort of understand. And obviously it also re relates to the business context. So some businesses are more catering for functional needs, some more emotional needs, and so on. But to really understand who your customers are, it requires a customer-centric strategy, and we can talk about buyer personas, for example, later on. Now, let's talk a little bit more broadly about the key changes in customer behavior. And I have divided them into three different categories that are interrelated, but however, still separate. So, new media consumption habits. So, this is probably the most obvious change in customer behavior. We use an increasing amount of digital media in our daily lives. And we are exposed to different things because we use different types of media and so on. So we're going to talk about that briefly. Then we will spend some time for talking about customer empowerment. So this relates to this idea of being self-directed, be in control. And digital media has empowered customers to be in control of their purchasing processes. And A and B, new media consumption habits and customer empowerment has led to multiple changes in purchasing processes. So we're gonna take an overview of what are the key changes in the what follows. Starting with the new media consumption habits, and these pictures that you can see sort of capture the key difference, what has happened in the last 50 years or so. So when I was a kid, late 80s, early 90s, I still remember it was the time of mass media. And basically families often gathered together. I would say that the whole nation gathered together to watch specific shows because there was a limited number of shows on TV. And some of these shows were as associated with commercials, for example. So I'm exaggerating a bit, but I could argue that the whole nation was more or less exposed to the same content and same commercial messages. This was the age of the mass media. And the same applies for TV, newspapers, radio, and so on. So it was highly standardized, mass medium, everyone exposed to the same thing. Now, what has happened or after the emergence of digital media, and especially recently, is that the media landscape is highly fragmented. So it's no longer just these couple of mass medias, but instead we can consume content in countless different platforms. I mean, we can still watch the TV and read the newspapers and so on, but especially the digital medium allows us to consume content about whatever you're interested in. There are millions and millions of different websites that we can be exposed to. There are dozens of different social media platforms we can be exposed to. So the key implication here, as I said, that at the mass medium stage, we were pretty much exposed to similar stuff via the mass medium. And nowadays, as we use and consume digital media in different ways, we are exposed to very different influences and very different commercial messages, which ultimately shapes our customer needs and even the fact like, who are we? everything we are exposed to affects us. It doesn't necessarily completely transform us into something else, but it definitely has an effect. And often it's highly unconscious, a thing that is happening in the background. So this is one of the key implications of the new media consumption habits. Must add that as we are exposed to different content, we get different influences. It basically also means that people become even more heterogeneous. It means that customers have different sets of needs, and it means that companies are cannot really cater for all needs with the standard product. So it goes back to this personalization and very specific product services and solutions for different sets of people to meet their needs. Now, customer empowerment next. So one of the most remarkable business consequences of digitalization is that customers have better access to information and more options than ever before, which significantly increases their bargaining power. So customers have become more powerful because we simply have more options. We have more information at our hand, and we don't need to buy from companies that we don't want to buy from. Every store in the digital medium is one click away. So, if you think about the old days when you visit the city center and you want to buy a new pair of shoes, for example, there is a handful of stores that are catering for that are sir I mean that are offering shoes. But today, I mean, there are countless different stores and the assortments are very broad, so you can select all types of shoes. So this basically gives us the power to select, and it's really difficult to compete in this environment if you don't provide the shoes that customers want to buy, because there's always an option. In this article by Lapraque and her colleagues, they have made a typology of different sources of customer power, so it gives us a little bit deeper understanding. And the article is rather old, but I think it's still highly valid. So the first source of customer power is demand-based power, which relates to the fact I already mentioned. So we have expanded pool of vendors and assortments. So more stores and bigger assortments available, which basically increases our bargaining power. So we have more power to choose because we have more options. Information power, if information-based power, we have easy access to information. So when we search for information related to products or services, or we want to evaluate different products or services, we have all this information if we just want to make an effort and do so. And it says here that it decreases the information asymmetry between customer and seller, which means that in the old days, when you enter the store and you're not an expert in buying shoes, for example, usually the sales representative is a shoe expert, and he or she can, if she or he wants, they can manipulate you or direct you to certain types of things. But today it is not very uncommon that customers come to the store and they have already searched a lot of information about a particular set of shoes, let's say three different pairs of shoes, and the customer might have much more knowledge about these particular shoes than the sales representative has. So, in many cases, the customers can be a bigger expert than the sales representative. And again, giving you more power to do purchasing decisions. You are not so easily manipulated by the sales representative. Not saying that all sales representatives are trying to manipulate you, but I hope you get the point. A network-based power. So it's not just the products and services that are available or the information provided by the companies and different organizations, but we can also use the networks. So we can create content, we can share content, we can consume content created by other consumers. Or it can be content, opinions, customer experiences, product reviews. So in other words, we can rely on other consumers as a source of information to make decisions. And again, this is one of the things that increases consumers' power. And finally, the crowd-based power, which relates to the rise of communities, platforms, and consumer-to-consumer marketplaces. So there are already a lot of instances of product categories that you don't necessarily need to buy from companies, but instead you can go to some platforms and rent them to you, or then just purchase them from other consumers. So instead of purchasing from companies, you can purchase them from other consumers. Maybe Airbnb is one famous example of this type of platform. So you don't have to stay in a hotel if you don't want to, but you can also rent a house or apartment from a fellow consumer. So again, this changes the dynamics in the competitive landscape as well. But all these four sources together just give us a better lenses to look at why customers have become more powerful at the digital age. Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart, said decades ago that I think Sam Walton died somewhere early in the 90s, but his famous statement is here. So there is only one boss, the customer, and he can fire everybody in the company from the chairman on down simply by spending his money somewhere else. And I wouldn't counter-argue, it's definitely a valid statement still. However, the digital media empowers consumers with more powerful weapons than spending somewhere else. Namely, we can share experiences, we can share opinions. So, if I don't want to buy anything from Walmart, it no doesn't necessarily hurt them too much. But let's imagine that I'm a powerful influencer, or I have a very sizable social media following. I'm a celebrity that people are sort of want to follow. Then I can, for example, share my opinion that I don't like Walmart or whatever the case was. And if I have this very loyal following of consumers, they might also change their attitude toward Walmart. And in that case, I could be the most that, or at least that would be a very powerful weapon to hurt a company. Now, especially the people with those followings might be the most crucial ones to please. And it goes two ways. So obviously also if there is an influencer or opinion leader who is a fan of something and becomes a brand ambassador, so telling positive things about a brand or product, then those customers, even though they might just buy one product, might become the most profitable customers. So this also kind of affects the idea of who is profitable customer and how to calculate profitability of different customers. So it's not just spending, but it's increasingly about the influence over other people. There is another point of view to the topic, stating that that consumers are not exactly more empowered, but instead we are being manipulated by all types of algorithms in the digital media. And this is often something that is highly subconscious. So there are few people who think that, let's say, social media algorithms or search engine algorithms or any algorithms really manipulate us. But I think this is a very difficult to observe. A lot of this is experience. Is highly implicit or subconscious psychological process. So, as mentioned before, we are influenced by everything we are exposed to in digital media, in physical media. So we are who we are because we are exposed to. Of course, we have a set of genes, but a lot of the things that we encounter during our life changes us. And it might not be very easy for any human being to see the moments when their attitudes have shifted and things like that. So I think at least this is a very interesting point of view that perhaps we are not just as empowered as we think, because these algorithms might make us exposed to the kind of things that direct our attitudes and intentions when it comes to purchasing or some other aspects in life. Anyway, highly interesting debate and good research topic as well, although very difficult to research on this. Let's move on to changes in customer purchasing journeys. And here in the figure, you see a classic textbook conceptualization of a purchasing process, which comes from the 60s. And I would say that's a great model because I think it's still highly valid. However, the technology has changed customer behavior at each stage. So I think the model has remained quite similar. There are, of course, instances where we don't go through all these stages and so on, but broadly speaking, this is a good model to depict how we make purchasing decisions. However, the technology is definitely shaping what do we do and how do we sort of execute these different stages. So firstly, about the model. So it starts from the need awareness. So we become aware of our of new needs, and we have this feeling that we need to purchase something. Then, if it's something not based on habitual purchase, so a can of milk or something like that, we usually search for information. We evaluate different alternatives. Then we make a purchase decision, and then we evaluate whether we are happy with the purchase or not, and we sort of accumulate experiences that affect the future purchases, so whether we're gonna buy a similar product in the future, maybe something else, and so on. So this is basically the model. And if we think about the role of technology and digitalization here, as mentioned earlier, digital media might make us aware of new needs, but most commonly the needs are something that are sort of internal. So we are hungry, or we need to go somewhere, or we need to do something. Often the need awareness is an internal process. However, the external influences, such as advertisement and all types of content we're exposed to, might make us aware of new needs. Again, this is something that many consumers do not easily recognize, so it might be something very subtle, but it might happen. When we move on to the next stages, say information search and evaluation of alternatives, that's where we see clearly the role of visualization. This is where the biggest changes happened. So anytime we look for some high involvement products or products that we don't buy daily or even weekly or monthly, then it's usually something that we search information for and we evaluate the alternatives. And this process has become quite digital these days. So we usually start with Google and end up in different websites and then maybe some social media spaces, or we look for customer reviews and things like that. Purchase decision, almost anything we can buy via e-commerce stores. But often we still buy things in physical stores as well. So this is kind of mixed when it comes to the role of digitalization. And again, post-purchase behavior is predominantly an internal process, how we evaluate how good the purchase actually was. But of course, some of us, for example, do those product reviews that might influence other consumers. Or sometimes we might even post about our recent purchases in social media. So this was a great product, or this was a really bad product. Please do not buy this product. So it can go again either way. So digitalization role has a role in all the stages, But I would argue that the biggest sort of phenomenon level change that has happened in purchasing is that people are, or customers have become much more active in many purchasing processes. So we spend much more time now that we have the access to the information. We spend much more time in gathering information and evaluating things, especially things that are important to us of or of high monetary value or just personally something interesting. We don't really think about the cost of using our time for evaluating things when we some of us enjoy doing it. So I think this active evaluation is probably the biggest shift in purchasing behavior in within the customers, and also of course the post-purchase experience. So we rely quite much on things like product reviews and comments on TripAdvisor and whatnot. Often, it's easy to give these examples from consumer contexts, but just as a notion, this is not delimited to consumer purchasing journeys, what we've been discussing, but instead, business buyers are equally fond of looking for information in digital media. So they look for all possible information that is available when they think about a new purchase decision. This graph by Gartner, for example, kind of has investigated the distribution of buying groups' time by key buying activities, and you can see that the biggest share of professional buyers, like how they distribute their time, is about researching independently online. So they look for information and resources, and then they select a handful of suppliers they want to negotiate with, and then it enters the sales negotiation stage. So overall, business buyers use digital channels for searching information, evaluating alternatives, and contacting sellers to the same degree as consumers, although the final purchasing decision is often an outcome of sales negotiations, especially when speaking of significant procurements. The implication for business-to-business marketers is that it is often kind of said that that you really need to have the great sales representatives, and it's a lot about the magic, how they make their sales. But the thing is that in the digital environment or today's environment, as professional buyers are doing this independent search, you don't get into the sales negotiation stage unless you have strong digital presence and you provide all the information and resources that the professional buyers need to sort of evaluate alternatives and think about their fit to their business case at hand. Let's move on to the changes in the field of competition. This is an old model by Michael Porter that depicts the five forces that affect the competitive dynamics in a given industry. So first of all, there is always this rivalry among existing competitors. Then there is bargaining power of suppliers, so the producers of the products that might affect the competitive dynamics. Then there is the bargaining power of buyers, so customer empowerment that we have already discussed. And then the threat of new entrants, as well as threat of substitute products. I think it's a very good framework to think about how digitalization actually affects the competitive dynamics. So first of all, if you think about the middle part, rivalry among existing competitors, well, it's no longer local competition, but it's more like global competition. So the range of competitors has increased due to the reduction of geographic boundaries. Bargaining power of buyers, we have discussed already a lot. So customers have many more options to select from, and they have much more information at hand. Bargaining power of suppliers, so the producers, is affecting a lot of the competitive the dynamics in many industries. The theoretical opportunity that suppliers have is to deliver products directly to the consumers. So there's a lot of talk about so-called direct-to-consumer model. And theoretically, it works nicely. You don't need the middlemen, you don't need the retailers. So you can directly sell to the consumers. But in reality, it has turned out to be challenging, as we will discuss a little bit later. Then there is the threat of new entrants. So some companies can use the opportunities of technologies and come up with different business models to the existing competition. And then there is the threat of substitute products. So some companies can make new product in or service innovations and change the competitive dynamics. And I'll illustrate this model via a short case exercise or case discussion. So Case Thomas Cook, it was bankrupted in 2019, and so badly that they had to sell even their brand for $14 million, which might sound like big money, but considering the legacy of Thomas Cook, it's almost like no money at all. So the brand was almost it didn't really have value anymore. So about Thomas Cook, it's a very, very established, or was very established legacy, travel group, almost 180 years old. They were providing package holidays, flights and hotels, annual revenue over 10 billion euros, 21,000 employees, 19 million yearly customers, a huge dominant player in the traveling industry. Now, we can discuss what happened to Thomas Cook by looking at the figure shown earlier. So, first of all, you could argue, obviously, there's always been existing competition among the rivals, but I would argue that the competition intensified once it was easier to, for example, compare the prices between these different competitors. But the more interesting things happened via these four other forces. So first of all, bargaining power of suppliers. So thanks to the digitalization, many of these providers of flights and hotels were able to sell directly to the consumers. So they were able to offer web services where you can book the flights that you want, the hotel rooms that you want, and you really didn't need the travel agencies. And especially the airlines and hotels didn't need travel agencies that much anymore. Next, thinking of the threat of new entrants. So there was a lot of price comparison sites for flights, for hotels that had emerged the market landscape, meaning that the expertise of travel agencies was no longer that much needed by consumers, because now consumers were able to check the best flight prices and connections via Momondo or one of these aggregate sites, or the best hotel rooms, best hotels and best rooms via, for example, booking.com. So this obviously decreased the need for travel agency. It was easier to sort of tailor your own personal travel package that fits your specific needs. There was also threat of substitute products. So companies like Airbnb came up with their platform model. You didn't need any type of hotel, but you could actually rent a room or house or apartment. So definitely one thing that affected the travel industry. And finally, the bargaining power of buyers. All of these factors together empowered customers to have more options to select from, different travel agents, different airlines, different hotels, different aggregate sites, more options, meaning more power for them, much more, I mean, intensifying the price competition. And there were also communities like TripAdvisor, where consumers and travelers were sharing experiences. So it also goes back to this crowd-based power. So this quite nicely gives one example of how digitalization is transforming the competitive landscape in traveling, and we could figure out a way to draw this model for any type of industry. But traveling is probably one of those industries that has disrupted the most. Now, let's talk about maybe something we haven't discussed yet enough. So the bargaining power of suppliers. So as mentioned, digitalization allows companies now to get rid of all types of middlemen and retailers. So if you produce a product, you can just sell it directly to the consumers via digital media. And theoretically, it's easy, and the business logic is there, of course, that you don't have to pay margins for all these middlemen between your product and production and the consumers. However, most brands haven't been very successful. Actually, there's only a handful of brands that have been very, very successful with the direct-to-consumer model. Here are a couple of examples of them: Case Dollar Shave and Beard Club. And I would encourage you to watch these videos if you have the time. And I think this is at least the key way to really become successful, is that you really need to differentiate yourself from other competitors. It's really hard to create sufficient brand awareness without the help of the retailers, and because your product must be kind of searched for in the digital environment. Almost all these successful cases have been about highly successful marketing communications, where you have been able to create content that is being shared, so it has these viral effects. And please check the videos. They are highly amusing and humorous. So these were some successful cases that give you an idea, like maybe how to succeed with this model. It's not gonna be simple. Even companies like Nike have tried D2C model recently, and they have been forced to kind of back up, so or kind of return from that strategy, because it seems that their retailers are the ones who have become highly dominant. So this is about the bargaining power suppliers from the retailer's point of view. And arguably, it is exactly these retailers that have become more powerful than ever, although there is a lot of competition between the retailers. But this is a case example of Amazon and why they have become so powerful. So first of all, they have nowadays hundreds of millions of customers, many of whom are actively interacting with their platform. So in other words, Amazon gets a lot of customer data, not just about what they buy, but what they are looking for, how do they navigate on the website, and so on. So they get a lot of customer data, and they have very good AI capabilities to make predictions on what kind of offerings customers are interested in. So they can predict, for example, what kind of products they must buy to their platform, that they can then deliver them to the consumers. But also, they can predict customer preferences and the kinds of products that they are that individual customers are interested in, which means that they can offer personalized customer experience that is tailored to the needs of their customers. So all of this together means that you have a lot of customer data, you have the AI ability, so you can provide better customer experiences. And of course, one of the key advantages of Amazon is also the cheaper prices due to economies of scale. So as it is a market leader in e-commerce in many countries, it can also offer highly affordable prices. And when you have a great customer experience and low prices, you usually earn the loyalty of the customers and you attract new customers because people are telling good things about your platform. The more customers and the more loyal customers you have, the more data you can collect from them, and the better predictions you can make, and the better customer experience you can deliver. And again, you get more customers. So it's kind of like a flywheel that is very difficult to challenge. So this is maybe just the kind of counterforce for the direct-to-consumer strategies. And in Nordic countries, we don't necessarily understand how dominant player Amazon is in many countries, like in US. It is, according to some stats, over 50% of the consumers' e-commerce purchases are done on the Amazon platform. So every other product that is sold to a consumer happens in Amazon platform in US. So it's highly dominant. And think from the supplier's perspective that, okay, Amazon takes high margins or whatnot, whatever the case is, you still want to sell your products on Amazon, or otherwise you are ignoring about 50% of all e-commerce. So the Amazon's case is of course the extreme, but some of these retailers have become very, very dominant, and they can pretty much tell to the suppliers the terms, because everyone almost everyone wants to be on that platform. As a final notion, the digitalization does not treat all industries equally, which is important to understand. So we talked about the travel industry, for example, where the competition is seems to be very fierce. These are maybe the two very extremes. So consumer categories, so when you sell different types of consumer goods, there is unprecedented competition and highly fragmented markets. Though there are millions of brands and millions of different products, and consumers are very empowered to select the products that fit their needs the best. Then, on the other side of the spectrum, there is unprecedented concentration of power in high-tech industries. So thinking of, for example, the Magnificent Seven companies these days, they don't usually have, or arguably they don't have, a lot of competition. So if you think of Meta, well, maybe there is the ByteDance and TikTok. If you think about Google, who are their competitors? There are competition, but it's clearly it's become kind of like a winner takes all market. If you think about the Amazons, they definitely have competitors, but there are very dominant players. If you think of Apple, they do have competitors, but still the competition is nothing like in many of the other consumer categories. So arguably there is unprecedented concentration of power in high-tech industries. And so the point being is that you need to take a look at each industry separately when talking about the competitive dynamics. This is, by the way, a very amusing video by Scott Galloway talking further about this point, and many, many others recommend you to watch it. Okay, I'm hoping that was able to deliver on the key learning goals. So first of all, you should be able to explain the concept of customer empowerment. Remember, we talked about these different sources of consumer power, so be familiar with them, and the implications for buying behavior, how the purchasing processes have been changing. Then analyze how digitalization shapes the firm's competitive landscape. And it would be good to think about as a kind of homework. So what I would like you to do is to think about some other industry and think about those five core forces and how digitalization have affected them. Thank you for watching this video, and have a great day.